Now back to the Tribune's Rick Pearson. It's the Sunday Spin on 720 WGN.
Good Sunday morning. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin. A very, very busy week that we're recapping, and the week that never ends, because overnight, of course, we had the Ninth Appellate U.S. Court rejecting the Trump administration's Justice Department request for an emergency order to reimpose the president's executive order on immigration and refugees. I wanted to play this cut of the Washington State Attorney General Bob Ferguson. He spoke with CNN's Anderson Cooper after a federal judge in Seattle struck down the president's initial executive order.
Things have to be done in accordance with our Constitution. That is the bottom line. And is central to who we are as a people. And the president simply did not meet that obligation, which is central to his responsibilities, and one, to be crystal clear, as we wrap up, I will hold him to throughout his administration, frankly, in the same way that I filed two lawsuits against the Obama administration when I felt they were acting in an unlawful fashion, and we prevailed in the first and are litigating the second. That's my duty and my responsibility as a lawyer and as Attorney General for the people of this state.
That's the Washington State Attorney General, Bob Ferguson. Joining me now here in the Allstate Showcase Studios, a good friend of the program, Rebecca Shee. Rebecca is the Executive Director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. And Rebecca, you part of this multi-pronged business effort over the years to try to gain some kind of comprehensive immigration reform, something that at one time looked very achievable when the Gang of Eight in the U.S. Senate bipartisanly put forth a proposal, now a proposal that many have walked away from. Then you have the Trump election that was, from the outset, kind of predicated on the issue of immigration. And you see what we've come to know as really kind of turmoil that exists. How is the coalition responding to all of this?
Thank you so much for having me again, Rick. Good morning. I mean, I think as you mentioned, our coalition with bipartisan business leaders came together to really try to address the root causes of our broken immigration system. And our employers from the high-skilled and low-skilled ends have seen over the years the ways in which our system hasn't allowed our business to grow, entrepreneurs to create more jobs, in the end, growing our economy and the workforce. And so we've seen in Illinois and also across the country, business leaders who are Republicans and Democrats have coming together to say, hey, you know, we have to do something to repair the system. And to your clip earlier, I think what we saw with this travel ban is that it, instead of moving closer to addressing the workforce or even safety, as the ban predicated to do, it actually further disrupted the workforce. You know, for example, one of our companies reported that they had an engineer who works in Chicago, and the work that he does, you know, makes possible about 12 U.S. citizens work here, and he was stuck in Nairobi for about three days because his passport originally was from Somalia, but he hasn't lived there for about 15 years. You know, his home is Chicago. He has U.S. citizen children. He has a green card. He's a legal permanent resident. And so, you know, for those days of uncertainty and chaos, you know, he was concerned. His family was incredibly fearful. And of course, the future of the business was in limbo as well. And I think that that being an example of, we all want safety, we all want security, but it's also important to really get at the root causes of these issues rather than, you know, as our chairman John Rowe says, you know, trying to kill wasps with a sledgehammer. That just doesn't work and doesn't make any economic or security sense.
Well, I was going to point out, and John Rowe, chairman emeritus of Exelon, and co-chairman of the Business Immigration Coalition, wrote a piece in Cranes and said that to him personally, that these orders were imprecisely conceived and poorly executed. Mm-hmm. And as far as the executed point of it, I think what seemed to be very concerning was the issue of people who had valid visas going to the airport and basically having written on them that that visa is canceled by virtue of this when, I mean, they were legal. And the effect, you know, and maybe you can explain like what an H-1B visa is and how that's kind of what's helping drive technology and highly skilled companies in the United States.
Sure. I mean, so we saw over this last week companies like Google, like Amazon, Facebook, these high-skill, high-tech giants that are you know, the engines of our economy coming out in very strong terms and a very united voice against these bans because, to your point, right, the drivers of their company are these high-skilled engineers and web designers, and many of them were immigrants or are children of immigrants. And, you know, many of them, to your point, are legal and have H-1 visas or even green cards that were included in these bans. And so I think for the business community, I think everybody agrees and support more security, better verification at our airports. But the facts are, you know, and this was a study that the Cato Institute actually came out, I think the day of or the day after the ban, showing that, you know, the chances of a refugee committing an act of terrorism in the United States is 1 in 3.6 billion. The chances of an undocumented immigrant committing one of these attacks, according to the Cato Institute, is 1 in nearly 10 billion. And of those seven countries that President-elect Trump listed in
President
his,
Trump.
Oh, sorry. President Trump listed in his bans. If you look at those seven countries, they constitute a very small number of people who committed attacks in the United States since 9/11. The Wall Street Journal had a great survey that showed there was 180 acts of terrorism in the United States, and those countries constituted about 11 to 12 of those attacks. And when compared to other countries, these nine countries actually have a lower instance of attacks than, you know, than countries not listed on the ban. So, I mean, that's all to say that we, you know, believe in improved security. We all would like to have a safer community. But let's figure out how to do that in a more precise and effective way rather than what has happened.
Well, we kind of saw some of this initially with the issue of whether Syrian refugees should be allowed in. And even Governor Rauner said he supported a pause while trying to ensure that the vetting process was rigorous enough. And actually, he said that the Obama administration did not communicate to the states how they do that vetting process. But we do know it is a lengthy vetting process.
Right. No, absolutely. You know, in compared to other countries like Germany and you know, the United States, as a percentage of our population, receives very few, you know, 10 times less than countries like Germany and others. And that is in large part due to our very rigorous vetting process, and both applying for refugee status and applying for asylum status. And in addition to that, you know, to your point earlier about people who hold H-1s or people who hold green cards, that vetting process is also very rigorous. I mean, I remember even when my father and I were in our process of getting a green card, and my father traveled a lot for the company Novartis, a pharmaceutical, and he was a doctor, so he traveled around the world for clinical trials. I mean, it took him years and years to even get to a response from the Immigration Bureau, because they vetted every time he traveled abroad and see what he was doing, and then will bring him in for questioning. So, you know, it was very, very thorough. And, you know, in the end, we were able to get our green cards, but we saw personally just the whole vetting process and fingerprinting, registering with the government, biometrics, and then waiting, you know, a long time for those results, and then going back and forth. So
we're speaking with Rebecca Shee, the executive director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition. I'm Rick Pearson. This is the Sunday Spin. Welcome back to the Sunday Spin on this Super Bowl Sunday morning. We're speaking with Rebecca Shee, executive director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition, a good friend of the program. And we're talking, of course, about the activities over this recent days over the issue of President Trump's executive order, order that was held in abeyance by a federal court judge in Seattle. And overnight, the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals refusing the Trump administration's Justice Department request for an emergency stay of that judge's order. So things are, quote, back as they were before the president's executive order, although to note that people who had gone to the airport with visas and had customs right canceled on them, those visas aren't any good. Mm-hmm. They have to reapply, mm-hmm. which is its own new set of factors. Mm-hmm. But that visas, green card holders are supposed to be allowed to travel, and that Homeland Security is lifted any of the restrictions. We got a call from a caller, and sorry, we don't have time to take the call, but the caller noted that the seven countries that were named mm-hmm. kind of in an indefinite ban mm-hmm. are countries in anarchy. Mm-hmm. And I guess maybe it's a two-way street question. Mm-hmm. Fear, but also these are, in many cases, people feeling oppressed.
Right. No, absolutely. I think that is a good point. I think about the two-way street is the people who are from these countries that are in turmoil, they're coming, and when they do get the visas, they're heavily vetted, you know, through a very rigorous process, get their biometrics, background check, their fingerprinted, and if they pass, which, you know, if we looked at the statistics of the United States receiving and accepting refugee and asylums are very low, and in the event that they do pass muster, they're here not to bring the anarchy, not to bring the turmoil from their countries, but to escape from it, and then to create a better life for their children and for their families here. I mean, there were stories both, you know, in Rick's paper, the Chicago Tribune, and around the country, just showing these personal stories of families that have waited for years and years and are bringing their children over to be reunited with spouses that are here. And they've waited patiently to go through this very, you know, rigorous vetting and security process, screening process. And when they finally, you know, get here, right, they're here to work hard to create jobs and to build a life like generations of immigrants have come to this country. So
I guess I wonder if with what we're seeing, if and I talked to Todd Meisch about this from the Illinois Chamber, about the whole issue of whether even if it's fruitful to even talk about any kind of comprehensive immigration reform because of just how polarized things are.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so I think that right now we are trying to respond and address some of these executive orders that are being issued and very quickly, right, in the last 2 weeks. So there's the ban of nationals from the seven mostly Muslim countries. And then a couple of days before that, President Trump also issued executive orders around, you know, prioritization for enforcement and deportations. And something that we've been pushing very hard as the business coalition is to pass the Bridge Act, which will legislate and replace DACA, the President Obama's executive order for the young undocumented immigrants who are in this country. This is the legislation that we've seen in Congress and that has bipartisan support for every Democrat who has signed on to be a co-sponsor. There is a Republican. And so right now we have six and six on each side. And you know, Senator Durbin is the sponsor in on the Democratic side in the Senate. Lindsey Graham from South Carolina is a Republican from the Senate. And locally, Congressman Gutierrez in the House with Republican Congressman Mike Kaufman from Colorado. So this is something, it's not comprehensive. It's one piece of this larger, you know, immigration system that we have to fix. But at least this is something that has bipartisanship. We're working very hard to build more. And the idea is that, you know, there's 750,000 of these young undocumented people who right now have a work permit. They have protection from deportations. They're working, you know, locally in Chicago. They're working in Exelon. They're working in Motorola. They're working in Deloitte. And, you know, they're paying taxes. Some of them are homeowners. And the idea is let's put this in legislation so that they can continue to contribute, continue to, you know, build their lives here and build, you know, the vibrancy of Chicago and Illinois. And so that's, you know, one example of, you know, if we can't get this done comprehensively and there's we don't have currently have the climate for that, we like to move forward on smaller pieces like this. That's good for the immigrants, good for the economy, and good for our country.
But is the climate even right to do, to try to even do piecemeal attempts? That's, I mean, to me, that seems to be the big question, because of all that Trump's election plus his executive orders have brought, it just seems to have more polarized the climate.
Sure. I think that one of the ways to, and we are working hard to push back on the narrative that Trump used in his campaign around immigrants, is to demonstrate and more visibly communicate the economic contributions of immigrants in this country, and that the facts show, you know, immigrants, whether they're documented or undocumented, they work. They're here to work. They're here to pay taxes, and they create jobs for Americans, right? Which, as you know, was a central theme in his campaign and in the premise for many of his policies in the last 2 weeks. You know, I was just in central Illinois a couple months right before the inauguration, and we did a roundtable with farm employers, with the local university, with medium-sized and smaller-sized manufacturers. And it was funny because one of the participants showed up because he said, I read this flyer, and I thought that this meeting was about how I can find more Mexican workers. And are we talking about a policy, or are you going to actually tell me where I can hire more Mexican workers? And so when we talked about to him more, and he said, look, you know, the work that I do on my farm is that we care for cattle, and we have, you know, orange and soybean and corn crops. And he says, you know, my best workers have been, you know, immigrants and Mexicans that have been with me for 15, 20 years. And he says, I love to hire native born, and we pay $15 to $18 an hour, right? And I advertise everywhere, but very few show up. And when they do, the native born, they're here for a few days and they quit because the job is dirty and it's hard. And, you know, and I mean, and that's to say that I think that a lot of, you know, to the myth of immigrants, you know, take jobs, or immigrants do not keep our community safe. I think it's important that we put out the facts and we put out these stories to show that immigrants do jobs that a lot of times native borns do not want to do. But by doing those jobs, they create opportunities and jobs that native-borns, you know, do prefer, right? Like, for example, in the restaurant industry, Sam Toya, who's on our board, always talks about that immigrants are the ones doing back of the house. They do the dishwashers, you know. They clean the floors. They clean the bathrooms, jobs that, you know, native-borns don't apply for. And then they, by doing that, they create jobs for front of the house, the hostess, the waitress, and jobs that, you know, native-born would prefer and apply for. And so it's an ecosystem that's complementary rather than competitive. So, you know, we have, you know, these stories across different industry sectors, and I think that that's the narrative, and that those are the facts that we're going to continue to push out. And, you know, there was a study by the FBI Crime Data Lab a couple weeks ago showing that places where immigrants live and where the communities grow because of immigrants are actually safer than places that do not see that growth. And because, you know, immigrants, when they move into a community, the first thing they do is that they try to open a business, right? And they go to church, or their kids are at the schools and they get involved. And so what immigrants do is that they strengthen the processes and these institutions that are important for crime control.
All right, Rebecca, thank you so much. I appreciate it. Don't mean to cut you short there, but there is a story to tell, and it's an ecosystem that exists. Rebecca Shee, Executive Director of the Illinois Business Immigration Coalition, thanks very much for joining me this morning.
Thank you so much for having me, Rick. Always a pleasure.
We'll be back with more right after this.